In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God. Amen. To remind you of last week's sermon, remember it's the first sermon of the year, the first thing that the fathers wanted to touch upon was that the gift that you have been given, the gift that each one of us has received, is more than all, up to and including John the Baptist had received, because he was born of woman. We are born of God. Remember, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. But who am I talking about? The Jewish people. The Jewish people. But as many as received him, as many as received Christ, to them gave he power to become the sons of woman, the sons of God, even to them who believe on his name. In other words, you might have heard something about Christ. Think about that. Think about the centurion who came to him, who had the servant that he wished to heal. He hadn't met with Jesus before. He'd only heard about him. That's what it means, even to them who believe on his name. And he gave them what? Power to become the sons of God. Because they were not born of blood. You know, you look at the genealogies in Matthew, for example. Genealogy is really, really important. And you talk about all of the great people, all from the lineage of Moses and David and all of the greats. It's not the blood. I've said this to you many times before. The blood that is in your veins is not what unites us. It is the blood from the cup of which we all drank that unites us into one body. I'm type B. B negative. Okay? So if I'm... You ever see a vampire sucking on my neck, you know, go cry out to the blood bank. Give him some B negative. But what are you? If you're O, well, you can take any kind of blood. But it doesn't save you. I was speaking to a doctor that I went to see just last Thursday, and I said to him, you know, I say this to all of the doctors, never feel that great about what you do because all your patients wind up dead. The only one who can save is the priest. And that's by delivering the person through the mysteries of the church to the Lord himself. So we're not born of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. Okay, so if you have this great gift, then what? Jesus rejoiced in his spirit and said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden the mysteries from the people that are wise in their own conceit. He says, you've hidden them from the wise and prudent. In your own conceit, it means the manufactured thought that you have that explains your existence. Maybe it's called the philosophy of life. It's your philosophy of life. And you have a way of thinking, as Kierkegaard said, about how things should be. Not how things are, but how things should be. It's like all of the people from time immemorial who wanted a utopian existence. They thought that they could have a great commune. They would get a doctor, and they'd get a pharmacist, and they'd get, you know, an engineer, and they would get a veterinarian, and they would get people that were good in agronomy, and people that knew about water, and people knew about building, and they developed a society. They get everything that they needed, from all walks of life, and they would assemble this group of people together, and they would find a very good place geographically, where the climate was temperate, where there was good rain, where the soil was good, where they weren't bothered by lightning storms or hurricanes or earthquakes. And they'd have this beautiful place. They tried this. tried this several times. I remember in the 70s, they decided they were going to have this big dome. It was going to be called the biosphere. And everybody's going to go inside this dome. And this dome was going to be a place where there was not going to be any entropy. Things weren't going to just go away. Everything would be recycled. All energy would be recycled. Everything that humans did would be recycled. The clothing would be recycled. Everything would be... So it would be this constant movement of energy inside this biodome to see, obviously, could we live on another planet? How could we sustain ourselves? You know, the problem going forth is any place you go into outer space, it's not the oxygen that's the problem, it's the water. You can get oxygen from water, but you can't get water without water. It's a really unique thing, and we need water. And it doesn't, you know, people wonder, what do you do in outer space now? They recycle their own urine. You know, you pee, it's collected, it's run through a filter, you drink it again. Over and over and over and over. They can't carry the water up to outer space because it's too heavy. So all these things were tried. We're gonna have a utopian existence. There's not going to be a utopian existence. What there is going to be is a period of testing on Earth to see whether or not you are indeed a follower of Jesus Christ. And when things get bad, are you going to waver? Are you going to look for different philosophies to follow? Are you going to look for different applications of psychological or other types of realities on a quasi-spiritual level to solve the problem? But the Lord said, you, meaning us, you have ears to hear if you will just open them. You have eyes to see if you will just open them. All you have to do is to open yourself up to me, and I will give you all of the things that are necessary. You know, some people count that life is supposed to be, for a person who is a sincere believer, it's supposed to be easy. Might I remind you of the prophet that was told to marry a prostitute? A prostitute. Not a new prostitute, by the way. One who had some miles on her and had some children. This is going to be your wife. What do you think that is? Why do you think this is? You know, there have been in times past where the church was called the great prostitute. Because the church would go off track. How is it when a church goes off track? Something that confesses Jesus Christ, an entity, an organ. Think of a church as an organ. How does the organ go off track? It believes something that we call... theologically, heterodox, something that is not straight. So something goes tangential to this true and the direct faith. There are people, I've said this to you at the time of Lord Byron, the great poet. People didn't baptize their children until the rich people did not baptize their children until they went on the great tour. The great tour consisted of, in the case of Byron's, from the British Isles to go all around Europe, everywhere he chose, and to do every bad, disgusting, filthy thing that his mind could think of. And when he got back, the idea was, it's going to be out of his system. He's seen the relative value of these things, and comparing them with the grace of God and the beauty and the splendor and the righteousness that is contained, he's going to say, that was filth. I was engaged in filth. And we call that kind of lifestyle today filthy, do we not? Until this day. Then they were baptized. Not until they were... Now, what happens if the children died prior to that time? Who knows? Who knows? But the church permitted this. The church permitted this. Now I'm talking about the Western church. I don't know, you know, the history of Egypt is so poor. You don't have histories as in the West. You don't have books in Egypt as in the West. For every book that you have in Egypt, you have 10,000 books in the West, literally. And if you look at the people who are writing, what do we have as fathers of the church after the time of Cyril and Athanasius? We have some things by Shenouda. We have some, but there's a great space in time where there was nothing. No, Egypt was overrun by Islam. But in Europe, there were also kingdoms that thrived, kingdoms that were torn down, kingdoms that were newly established. There was always upheaval. But the church can go bad itself, because the church is made up of whom? It's made up of us. You know, the Roman Catholic Church is going through some big problems right now. They just found somebody, I can't remember his name, but he's a guy that likes to take a private jet. He's a bishop. And even if it's a 30-minute commute by jet from one city to another, he gets a private jet for himself. And, well, since you have the private jet, you have to have a private car, do you not? So he's chauffeured to the private jet, steps on the jet, steps off the jet, private car. And people are saying, respecting the poor, respecting those who tithe, respecting those who have given, how do these two things work in the mind of a shepherd of a big city? How do these work? We had a problem of our own like this not too often, not too long ago, I meant to say. And, you know, the use of money sometimes is for personal aggrandizement. Sometimes it's like when a person will build a great, great cathedral. And they say, well, look, I built this great cathedral for God. Well, God knows whether or not the cathedral was built in this fashion for God or for the person who is always going to be remembered as the one who built it. And sometimes that is the big motivator. And God knows, because there are other things and hints that will give away. You know, one time there was this man that was considered to be a priest by some people, a good candidate for priesthood, and I put my foot out and dragged it, and I said, look, this guy is a deacon with a good voice, and he has learned how to say all of the things that are popular for people who will look at him and say, oh boy, that guy is really good. But if you ask him about some of the things for which people don't show up, he didn't know any of those. Not one. So he wasn't in it because he loved the prayers. He was in it because he loved the acclaim that the people gave him for having the good voice. And he loved that. And I said, that, in my mind, disqualifies him. Ask him if he knows any psalms. There are people that are great in the psalmody. You know, we have it's over 600 pages. Our psalmody is more than 600 pages. And there are people that know this backwards and forwards. But you ask them to say some of the psalms that David, the prophet and the king, wrote. Can you say those? No. Well, then you don't really like praying. You like singing. You know, we have popular singers that know thousands of songs. They wouldn't fit in five of our psalmodies. Thousands of songs. Just think of the songs of the Beatles or the Rolling Stones. Those guys get on stage and they sing them from memory, right? They wrote them, right? But do you know how long? If they were to sing, you know how many albums the Beatles have put out? Or the Stones? Not to mention the ones that they can sing that they know that other bands have put out that they simply admired. But there's a way to look to see in the depth of the heart of the person what you're going to do with the gift that God has given you. If He's given you a lively intellect, and He's given you a good voice, or He's given you a mind that is quick so that you can spin a story and elucidate something that for others is dark, well, use it rightly. You see, the Lord said to them, there were so many that wanted to see what you've seen, and they couldn't see it. They couldn't see it because it wasn't present to be seen. They couldn't hear because the Lord had not had His incarnation. Imagine if we had, if the church had just a scrap of a recording of Jesus' voice. How much would that be worth? How much do you think people would pay for just, I don't know, let's say Him saying the Sermon on the Mount, and you got to hear the voice of Jesus? How much would that be worth? Just that little saying. So blessed are your ears if you allow yourself to hear, and blessed are your eyes if you allow yourself. If you allow yourself to see. So then, you know, he fields a question from a lawyer. A lawyer says, this is a really impertinent thing. Teacher, what shall I do? Not what shall we do. What shall all of us do? What shall I do? What he was looking for, it's like the kid that raises his hand. He's going like this. Oh, God, if they'll only call on me. Oh, teacher, it's me. Teacher, oh, no, here. Two hands is better. He wants so badly to be called upon, to show that he has control over this knowledge. It's here now. I'm going to show you. I'm really good. I want you to acknowledge that I'm really good. So what should I do? And the Lord turns it back on him. He says, how do you read the law? How do you read it? Well, you love the Lord. You love Him with all your heart, your soul, your strength, your mind. And your neighbor as yourself. Now that's where he put his foot into the noose. Because he didn't have a neighbor. In his estimation, there was no one like him. See, if you really feel the neighbor's right across the street from where I live. One of their kids stuck a knife in the tire of my daughter's car, actually, flattened the tire. And they did another little piece of vandalism. The neighbor on the right absolutely hates us for reasons that are hard to fathom. When the electricity went out, it stopped at her house and went forward, but at my house I had electricity. So when they asked they asked their friends first if they could, plug in a wire to feed the refrigerator and maybe the TV or something like that and draw electricity from their neighbors temporarily until their power was restored, their neighbor, who they had known for 10 years, refused them. We said, okay. First time we were asked. Okay, no problem. But they hate us. It's a bitter old woman. And on the other side of us, there's a guy who, we're not too sure about his living situation, but he's got a cute dog. And he goes out every morning and every evening. He smokes a cigarette and lets his dog run around and pee on the tree. The dog can't weigh more than 5 pounds. It's, Those are our neighbors. I don't live up to love my neighbor as myself. As a matter of fact, I hate my neighbors. Now, that's only in, and I have to say this, that's only insofar as my personal taste and my personal preference is concerned. If anybody, anywhere, at any time, needed something, not wanted something, needed something, and I was in a position to offer it, I would offer it. Always. I told you the story a long time ago. Abunolua, we were sitting in his car, his wife and his two kids and me, you know, and he's in front of his church, Merigurga Sporting. And here comes this old fat black woman wearing a black dress, you know, and she's literally as fat as she is tall. And he says, "You see this woman?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "She's a Muslim. And she's rich. But she's coming to the priest to ask for money." So he gives her something small, like 25 piastres or something like that, right? Which, back in the day, was a meal. I said, "Well, why'd you give it to her?" "Well, if I hadn't given it to her, she'd have been start screaming about how the priest was stingy. About how the priest was unkind, was not living up to the gospel message of love, how the priest was not looking at all as sheep in his pasture, but only certain ones." This happens quite frequently. People will come up to me and they will want my time. And I already have obligated myself to using my time for something else. Typically, when I'm talking about something like this, I'm talking about going to the gas station before I'm going to travel. So I'm filling my car to get some gas so that I can go to the people that I've said I'm going to. And then they come up to me because of the way that I appear. And they want to have a one-minute conversation, which is invariably a half-hour conversation or longer. And what can I do? And then when I give them whatever it is they have asked for in terms of advice, then they want proof. Well, sometimes we think incorrectly about ourselves that the things that we have chosen to do are the things that are going to most please God. But God is really most pleased by the things that are hardest for us to do. Because then he knows that there's tension inside us. That there's kind of like a cognitive dissonance. You have, like on the little cartoon character of Pluto, and there's this cute little dog that has come into his midst, and the cute little dog is getting all of Mickey's attention, and then the little dog falls in the well. And the little dog is going to drown, and then there's Pluto. Pluto can save the little dog from drowning, but if he does so, then the cute little dog is going to take his place. So he's got the little devil on one side and a little angel on the other side talking to him. And he's saying, "Let him drown, let him drown. You deserve, you've been Mickey's dog a lot longer and you know, you deserve all the good stuff." And it was, no, you, and the angel would give different advice. Finally, in the cartoon, the angel walks across the back of Pluto's shoulders and punches the devil. And the devil goes up in smoke. But when that's happening inside us, this is a thing that is pleasing to God. It is like Isaac, who is who's wrestling with the angel. It's actually the Lord himself. But the fact of the matter is that you have in your own life these kinds of tensions that pull you one direction or another. And in the midst of that, if you come out victorious and Christ comes out in that moment victorious, that's the most pleasing thing of all. The most pleasing thing of all. because he knows you have overcome. For the sake of your obedience to him, and not just obedience, but that you are allowing him into your whole person to form you and to let you be conformed into that which he has always desired. So, we have a great gift. We have become the sons of God. We believe on his name. We were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And as many as have heard him from the Bible, from the pulpit, from the mouths of people that felt. You know, there are people who can sing a song and you say, well, beautiful voice, good orchestration, you know, it was really, you know, really nice song. And then there are people who can sing the same song and it'll make you cry. Or it'll, if it's a different type of song, it will compel you to action. You'll be propelled forward. Or it may be a song that just fills you with joy. It's because of the person's identity to it who is sharing that with you in that moment. And you can feel that sometimes. If you feel the sincerity of the person who is saying the very thing, then you can say, I trust that. I trust that. And we have sometimes great expositors of the Bible who lead us in those directions. Glory be to our God, both now and ever, and to the age of all ages. Amen.